ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents a voice of truth and inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, laughter, and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, and on a mission to inspire humanity in embracing, honoring, and engaging the changes going on in ourselves, in our lives, and in our world. As we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence, always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Life Changes with Filippo, and now your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thank you, Mark. This is an exciting show. Actually, this is our 101th show. 101th? How would you say that?
101st?
101st?
Or 101st.
Our 100... I think I've just come up with a word. I like it. 101st show, and... our guest today will be the voice that you have just heard, Mark LeJour. And so I am looking forward to sharing what I know about him and what he knows and maybe hasn't shared with me, with all of you. So that's very exciting. You know, so much is changing. And like I've said before, this show might as well be called Life Changes for Filippo, because life changes is changing. Life is changing for me. Of course, the show is helping change me, but all of you are helping change me, and I trust, as I read emails and hear people tell us, that we are helping change you all. For the better, of course. And so I was getting concerned, actually, until I talked to some friends as to what might be happening to me. I think I shared on the show a while back where I thought I was dying because I was looking at things around where my place, and I was saying, I know who would like that, and I don't feel like I need that anymore, and I know who I could gift that to, and don't think I need to keep that around anymore. And I was thinking, wait a minute, why am I giving my belongings away? And technically, I've been doing that for a long time, actually, giving away paintings and art and all this stuff that has no meaning, and people have said, sell it. Well, for some reason, though the money wouldn't have been nice, I haven't had the feeling or desire to sell them, but rather to gift them away. And I say gift them. So the other day, I was doing some banking, and as I walked out of the bank, I saw a store across the street that I have gone into many times that has a lot of things that I have bought over the years since I've been living here and banking there, and a lot of cool things that I've also bought as gifts, et cetera, et cetera. And I walked in the store, and because there was a big sign outside that said, going out of business sale, all things must go and up to 70% off or something like that. So I thought, wow, here are things that I like that I've bought before, or, you know, maybe decided not to buy, whatever. Now I can get them at a huge discount. And I walked in, saw a lot of great things, actually picked up a couple things and held them and put them back and walked out of the store with absolutely nothing. And I thought, I didn't think anything of it, actually, as I walked out of the store. I was very content to not have bought anything. Now, I like buying things. I'm not a big have-to-buy-things person, but there were a lot of things in this store that I liked, but I didn't feel the need to have, and walked out with nothing. Or did I? I walked out with something. I walked out with a big question. And that was, why did I not buy anything? Why am I not feeling the need to have more things right now? It's a problem for me. I'm trying to think what's going on. And then recently I received an email from somebody of an older generation, friends of mine. I love how I have friends of every generation, from babies all the way up to 98-year-olds, literally. And the babies and the 98-year-olds aren't sending me emails, but somewhere in between, somebody sent me an email from a generation that's older than I, and it was supposedly funny, and it wasn't. And I remember how it used to be funny, and now it's no longer funny. And I wonder if a younger generation than mine would have not thought it was funny at all. And I used to think it's funny, and now I don't. And yet the older generation still thinks it does. And I was thinking, wow, something's happening. Certain things aren't funny to me anymore. I can't laugh about making fun of certain people or certain groups. I'm not thinking about owning things at the moment. Maybe I will again, but I'm thinking of giving more things away, even more than I've done. Well, I'm not dying. But when I shared this with friends, they said that there's some kind of a shift going on inside of me, at least, and that I'm focusing on things that are more important, because they also noted how I have, for someone who works all the time, I have stopped to spend more time with friends lately. I have made a point of spending more time with people than giving them things or buying them things, but actually spending my time with them. Things are shifting in me. And I'm happy to be sharing this shift within me with all of you, because I understand that a lot of you are going through the same thing. So I look forward to continuing this conversation. And who knows, we might all shift again to where we're all buying all things again, and a lot of things are funny again. Or, I mean, don't get me wrong, things are still funny. Really funny, but just not the same things. Anyway, I'm sharing these life changes with you all, as you all are sharing with me, and I am grateful for that, because I am growing because of you, and I trust and I understand that you are all growing because of us, and what a great symbiotic relationship we have here, and I look forward to it continuing for many more years to come, in love and joy and growth and great experiences together. So with that, we're going to break here for just a moment and be back with our guest for today, our very own producer and announcer and co-host, Mark LeJour.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. And ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
I love it. That's the voice that I'm going to get to interview right about now. You know, actually, every guest that we've had, I have a prepared introduction for our guest, but I have a feeling that we are going to be introducing our guest, or Mark's. I want Mark to talk about who he is within this interview, because it's very pertinent to what we're going to be talking about after he talks about who he is. So let me just go ahead and say, you all know him as the voice, and you all know him with the producer segment that we have at the end of the show. And so many of you love him already. We get it in emails and when we're out and about, people telling us. So I'm happy to be interviewing on our show Mark M. LeJour. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me.
well, thank you for letting us have you on our show. Mark, it's not a proper introduction, but the way you share your story, I've gotten to hear this a couple times because people ask you to share it. You have been on such an amazing roller coaster ride, which is so pertinent to life changes and the reason why we are doing this together as for what you've experienced in your life as your life has changed. So are you able to, could you encapsulate like as way of introduction, where you come from, who you are?
I can do that. I can do that. I was, I guess I'll go back to the beginning, given the essence of life changes, and I think why you're asking me to
absolutely
to do this. born and raised in just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in Parma, Ohio, Midwest, you know, white bread neighborhood, and grew up just like many other, you know, Midwestern folks. My upbringing was uniquely, though, centered and had a kind of a special energy to it, in that I grew up singing and did some theater, musical theater, and had some neat experiences around the creative arts, if you will. I was trained as a vocalist as a very young boy with the Cleveland Institute of Music, and ended up with the Ohio Boy Choir touring around the world, and sang for a couple of presidents and the national anthem at Shea Stadium, and had some really neat experiences, Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris, and many neat experiences with Andy Williams at the Christmas tree lighting ceremony. That was kind of fun in D.C. That shifted over time as I was growing. We had moved from Cleveland to Florida. My father had retired from NASA and did what a lot of people do up north and move south. And I moved between freshman and sophomore year of high school, which is a very interesting time to transition, right after you make all your friends and build all your cliques. Moving from Cleveland to St. Petersburg was very, very different cultures, if you will. So that had with it its own energy. But I left. I was also playing saxophone at the time and was in the spirit band in high school. When I moved to Florida, our arts program was very, very small, and I decided to, we were all being harassed. We were band geeks, and we were, you know, one thing or another, as the sports were predominant in the southern school, as opposed to the big northern school that I was in. Both the arts and the sports were kind of equally respected and had, you know, large contingents and a lot of energy around them. And so I kind of hung up my creative hat and decided that I needed to prove my man in sporthood, and so I went out for football. And that has with it its own story, but then ended up taking me on a different path and different energy as I finished through school. By senior year, I ended up team captain and got a scholarship to play Division II NCAA, And I never looked back creatively, but started down a different life change and a different path. Ended up pursuing a psychology degree this was Slippery Rock University in Western Pennsylvania. That psychology degree had an emphasis towards criminology, as I thought I was going to end up in the DEA or the FBI doing undercover work and psychology and kinesics. But the government put a hiring freeze out and said, you guys with only or that aren't accountants and attorneys, go get professional experience and come back and see us. And I said, what am I going to do with my life? I was just on the heels of 18 months with the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office, which afforded a lot of interesting lessons, and I was certainly on a career path. And this was another big life change. So I ended up pursuing the financial markets. Having grown up middle class, I decided, you know, I didn't know a whole lot. I didn't know the difference between stock and livestock, and wanted to learn as much as I could about the financial markets and about managing your money, et cetera, et cetera. And so I went and got my Series 7, became a licensed securities broker, and started down the Wall Street path. Literally, just about as I ended up working in New York for 6 years and worked with firms like Payne Weber. I was a Dillon Reed affiliate, and ended up with Shields & Company, a New York member firm. Carried just about every license they would give me at the time. I was a principal. I ended up opening 3 retail offices for them, doing some institutional trading, and started looking at deal flow. Deal flow in terms of ventures. I had amassed a significant amount of wealth under management at the time, almost $500 million, and started looking at different opportunities where I could, you know, help to expand our presence from the retail side into the investment banking side, which they didn't have that kind of business within Shields at the time. Short of it is I ended up hooking up with an old friend of mine who was leaving Robinson Humphreys, writing a business plan. This is the mid-90s now, right at the beginning of this, the dawn of this thing called the Internet.
Hmm.
And he was writing a business plan for three technologists out of the University of California, Berkeley, invited me to a meeting, and the founding of a company called Inc.ume was that meeting. And I was the catalyst for the first $3 million that came into the company and part of the founding team, and found myself on the that big wave that was the initial internet launch and the exuberant growth and everything that was that period of time. Inc.ume was one of the top five companies during that internet wave. Its technology was core to search engines. And most of the big companies back then, MSN, Yahoo, AOL, Excite, At Home, a lot of these used Inc.ume technology, Hotbot, CNET, other companies. And we went from zero to 22 billion in 2.5 years. Part of that was obviously through a public offering. And that set me off on another life change. I started to pursue a kind of an ad hoc venture career on the heels of that. I was introduced to a group out of Florida called MILCOM, Military Commercial Technologies, Inc., which was a military commercial technology incubator. Twice a year, they'd get together with some of the brightest minds in technology and venture capital and banking, and would roadmap the environment technologically, determine where things were going and how things were converging as this new internet was taking shape and all the old models were breaking down and whatnot. And I had the good fortune of sitting in the back of the room and listening to a lot of really smart people kind of define and forecast our futures, and started participating in the launch of several high technology ventures, commercializing ultimately over $700 million in U.S. technology out of companies like Lockheed, Raytheon, ITT, Honeywell, etc. And all that time, started looking at the grid, the internet, the way communications and technology was interlacing, the way networks were coming together, and seeing the technologies that the military had, which were so far advanced. And I started to formulate my own visions of the future through that process, and ended up launching a company of my own at the time, a public holding company, where we were a player in the high-speed video and file transfer space, and had a number of neat experiences, mostly in the technology side, but I also started looking at content and what the grid was being used for, and recognizing that one day, back then, one day we would all have a television on our hip in the form of a smartphone. And I literally had people laugh at me when I would forecast that we would actually watch television on our phones. That was how differently we looked at the world at that time. But it was all very important as I rode those waves of the ups and the downs of the internet wave and then, the market's fluctuations and these different companies' successes and others that were certainly not successes and that whole body of work. But it ultimately led me, again, on the life changes path to meeting you and Dorothy and coming together with this project, which is really core to what was in my mind's eye, which was this desire to use the grid in a positive way. The grid meaning communications in general, the ability to access a massive amount of people. Because I started to think, boy, you know, if everybody has a television on their hip, if everybody has a TV or a media-enabled phone, what kind of content are they viewing? What are they seeing? What are we showing them? Is it all reruns, or is there something more pervasive than that? And even back then, I saw the power of the internet as the great equalizer, as people can access information and can get past what was before a distribution base that was controlled by very few people and controlled specifically and mainly for profit. And with agendas, and the internet immediately allowed you to cross borders, to move past language barriers, to seek truth, to ask questions, and to reveal, and certainly now, today, looking back, we're seeing it. We're seeing it all around as it plays such a big part.
What an interesting perspective. I don't know that I've ever thought of it that way. But, you know, Mark, I thank you, because sharing your life changes and the types of experiences that you've had really begs the question, you know, why here, why this, and what happens from here. But before we go in there, actually, just listening to a couple of the things that you're just noting, you know, you were singing, and you were then from singing you went to football, and then from football police officer, and then police officer Wall Street. You've had a lot of life changes, but the interesting thing to me was that you weren't just singing. A lot of people sing. You're singing with Andy Williams and in front of the president, and then you go play football and you become team captain, and then you found Inc. to Me, and that ends up being one of the top five internet companies of all time at the time. Did you set out? I've never asked you this, never thought to. Did you set out in everything that you did to say, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to be the best one at it? Or does it come naturally? Or do you have any idea what the magic there is?
It's interesting having that reflected back to me in at this point in time in my life, and at this point in time in our show's evolution, but our individual growth and evolution, because of course, yeah, there's been a lot of big wins, and there was certainly a period of time where losing, the idea of losing, placing second, was not an option to me, and I didn't even approach things, I don't think, from there. I just went after it with a certain confidence and did what I do, but that also made things even more challenging when I wasn't, when I did, in essence, lose. You know, I think there is no losing. You know, losing is a word that we can discuss another point. But because everything is a gift, but when things didn't work out the way I expected them to, because of course, you know, what came with that big internet wave was the whole back end of the wave, and I participated heavily in the collapse of the market and have a lot of learnings and journey along with that.
So. Right, which is a whole other story, and talk about life changes there, and maybe even the some of the biggest changes in your life and the learnings and the experiences. But, you know, It's interesting because you're here now, and this, whatever it is, this energy that you have about, okay, I'm going to win. And yet in experiencing you, you say there is no winner unless everybody wins, in a sense. And so you're always looking for Fair First, which is a company you founded. You're always looking for what's right for everybody. And yet you're the winner here. So, and becoming more and more so. So in other words, you're taking everybody with you. This is new, in a sense, to people.
I'll tell you a story that's very interesting that you point that out. Because yes, that was kind of what I was saying when I was referring to not coming from that place. It wasn't about me egoically having to win. It was about achieving a positive experience, and yes, for all those involved. And speaking of not winning, my high school football team had been dealt a tough blow as one of the coaches had left, and a couple of our top players had transferred out, and a number of things had happened. And we had somehow been scheduled up a division, so we were playing teams that were way bigger than us, and we didn't win a game my senior year. I was able to turn that into a personal victory as I, you know, excelled and set records and was all county and all state and all of those things. But what was interesting is because of our schedule, a lot of these big 5A schools in Florida made us their homecoming game, which you always make the homecoming game, a game that you're pretty much assured to win. So if you talk to any of my friends you'll that were on the team, I became known for the guy that was cheering us on in such a way that all we had to do was score and kind of set the other team back to disappoint them for their homecoming. So that's what I was going after. If we could shake them up just a little bit, then so we could still come away with some kind of a win, and that way we could still achieve a positive experience out of it.
And yet you also let the home team win for because you like to see people happy. Well, that's great. So in a sense, everybody won. And I like that. And so that brings us to life changes, actually, because you not only did you see the technological side saying, okay, this is what's going to happen in years to come, and you were obviously way ahead of your time, but you also see lack of hope and despair out there and frustration, and you're saying, wow, not only can we use technology for the game, but we can actually help people. And that's something that I want to focus on when we come back right after this. We're talking to Mark LeJure, who's our host, but who is so much more. And you've got a little bit of what that is in the beginning of the show here. We're going to get a lot more when we come back.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
And that's Mark LeJure's voice, who's our guest for today. And if you want to learn more about Mark, you can, of course, go to lifechangeswithfilippo.com, and you'll read about him there. And as we grow this and as we grow our lifechangesnetwork.com, you'll be able to learn more and more about him, because he's going to be involved, and already is, actually, in a lot of projects. And it's getting really exciting and interesting to be watching his career as we're watching ours together. So we're back with Mark, and Mark has had a lot of successes and, as you said, some downside to some of the experience that he has. And when he means down, he really means down. But he certainly has been able to create an environment here within Life Changes where he is bringing so many incredible people together to do so many incredible things. And I had a vision for Life Changes. Dorothy had a vision for Life Changes, and he had a vision for changing lives through technology and all that. And here we've all come together. We've been attracted to this. And Mark, what is this in your words, coming from the guy who was all that and still is?
I'll lead into it with this note in talking about those downtimes. You know, the education, the journey, you know, really, really hit its stride and I guess its turbo drive during the challenges, not the successes. That's when I went inward. That's when I started trying to figure out how, you know, the whys, the detachment, the letting go, you know, even though I had always been a, you know, that kid from Cleveland that wanted to make a difference and loved to share and had the generosity. I think to a certain extent, I became some of that success. I became immersed in some of, you know, the power and status that comes with the upside of that and the losing it and the adjusting to that, expanded my, inward reality and really though more importantly highlighted some of the desires that I had to share with others and you know goes back to my psychology background and some of the my desire to serve. I think the bottom line and to bring it back to your question is that that the essence of what I learned during those challenges. I realized that I was experiencing that and I could help bring what I had gone through. I could bring the learning that I had of overcoming the challenges, the struggles, the adversities, the criticisms, the, you know, a lot of friends are on the boat when you're buying the boat ride and a lot of friends jump off the boat when you're, you know, that kind of thing, that I could bring that to others. And so that they wouldn't have to go through everything that I had gone through or that maybe I could help share those experiences to help make sense. And so that was kind of the path that I was beginning when we met and we, you know, discovered our ability to communicate our journey together and share it in a fun way and talk about it and then now share it with the world. The idea of using this medium for a higher purpose, but doing it in a real and engaging way, in a true way, as opposed to a packaged way, I think is the difference of really being out there and being real and being raw, and sharing our journeys with you know ourselves and with you know our audiences has been important to me and has come into focus on the heels of this, you know, all of these life changes that you've heard.
And, you know, and actually I thank you for saying that about how we express ourselves and being real. And my monologue at the beginning of the show was very much like that, where I said, things are changing and I'm not feeling the need to buy things right now and what have you. That may change again, and I'll feel the need to buy things, and I'll share that at that time. But what was most important to me was that focusing on, well, what is taking its place at the moment is spending time with family and spending time with friends. And you know, you and I alluded to that in a show once when we did the producer segment. So anyway, so yes, sharing, well, we'll talk about sharing real life in real time.
Indeed.
Real people sharing real life in real time. So, Mark, what do you see as the future of technology? And I'm sorry, I don't mean technology. Where my mind was going was I've seen a couple businesses, huge business opportunities come your way. And I have been impressed. And at the same time, it's like, damn, you just turned away a lot of money, dude. What are you doing? Where you have said to me, those companies are just in it for the money, or those companies don't realize that that's an old paradigm. And so, what are you seeing? What are you looking at?
You mentioned Fair First, which is the name of my venture business.
Right.
That came up during one of my most darkest moments and darkest days. There was a company I was involved with. We were closing an acquisition. This was while the markets were crashing and we were trying to survive things and grow things in a, you know, kind of a downward momentum market. And we had been negotiating to acquire a company. And as a lot of conventional business, you know, that the survival of the fittest, kill or be killed business mentality goes, they kept negotiating, kept ratcheting their deal up. We had an agreement, they would change it. And here I am getting ready to step on a plane to go finish this acquisition and announce it to the shareholders. And they try to do it again, right as I'm stepping onto the plane, improve their deal one last time. Called it off. I hung up the phone and I went out to the beach and I walked and I probably yelled a few expletives here and there and maybe threw some sand and I did all sorts of stuff. But I started, you know, asking myself why, asking the universe why. Why is it that people, I immediately, it was clear to me how much time and energy was wasted and how nobody benefited from that moment on. And there's so many thousands of people that could have benefited positively from this joint effort. And I started to think about how much energy is spent on negotiations and on posturing and on the battle of business rather than the unification and the execution and getting things done and doing it in a mutually rewarding way. Because the only time it works is when it's mutually rewarding. You go right to a fair deal. That's the deal that's going to get done. You go to fair first. That was where the name came up. But point being is that leads to where I see things, and the way I see things now is because that's one small example of many different experiences. When you're in trying times, people's character is revealed. You see the truth. And you know, when it was the high-flying times and money was abundant, it was easy to fix problems, throw money at it, and mask it over and redo situations. But when that wasn't available, the truth would come out and you would see, you know, people's dark side or you would have constant challenges or they would project their fears, their limitations, or just purely not tell the truth, look you in the eye and tell you the exact opposite of the truth. And over a period of time, no matter how tenacious you are, it'll wear you down. And it finally got to a point where I realized I do not want to work in that environment with those kind of people, and more importantly, it's not congruent with what we know now is the shift that's going on and the awakening that's taking place, that this is not the world, that was the world that was, and that world that was no longer works. Those models don't work. You know, capitalism, you know, I'm a big believer that capitalism is breaking down, and what is to reveal is a creatively collaborative culture.
You know, Mark, this is interesting because I didn't have this consciousness or this understanding when I was working for IBM, but there was a quote-unquote big shift happening at IBM when they were starting to get rid of a lot of people. And, you know, there were a lot of people that felt their importance or that knew their importance or walked around like they were important because IBM had given them a title. And it's interesting because there were times when I looked at people and said, you're not who you think you are. You're being sustained by something that's about to let go of you. And when IBM started getting rid of people, well, then these people ended up in positions where maybe they belonged all the time and they became realer. and all of a sudden, like, real life had hit them. And it's interesting to now have the perspective of what you're sharing. At the beginning, if I would have known that there's this big shift coming at IBM, then they're going to lay you off, and then you're going to be somebody else, and you're going to wish you hadn't hurt those people who are right now below you because you're going to need them. And as we're looking at the changes you're talking about, we can see companies or people and say, look, if this paradigm shifts, you're going to be in trouble and you don't want to go there.
Yeah, there's no question that that we can take a look at it from that perspective. We can also look at how that type of battlefield business mentality doesn't serve anymore. So many companies have been affected by the markets adjustment and the economics changes and the global distribution changes that they're starting to look at each other and say, rather than, you know, try to kill the other off, how can we work together to survive this? Just like families that are being laid off are saying, how can we share our resources among neighborhoods? Or I saw the other day in one of the Florida cities, I think it was Orlando, that poverty among children is exceeding 25%.
Right.
And that these kids and families are moving into small hotels, sharing rooms, you know, almost going back to, it reminded me that the Tibetan communities that I've read about, where it's a common shared resources, and guess what? They're happy again. They're feeling safe. So, you know, looking at, there really is no difference where we, before it was just business, right? Well, there isn't just business. Business is a piece, is a part of our life. And you can't look at the two separate. And I think people are starting to realize that, because you can't compartmentalize. So this is one of the things that I think is paramount going forward, is that we start to look at, or more importantly, draw a line in the sand and be willing to say, this is the way I want to work. I want to be in a room with people that are like-minded, that are there for the common good rather than their own trip up the ladder or their own wealth or their own agenda.
This is so great. Coming from somebody who's been at the top, and when we say the top, we mean the top, and who will be there again, and is sharing this consciousness of saying, I've been there, and there's another way that we can do this. And I thank you for sharing this wisdom with us. And I'm looking forward to the more wisdom you're going to share with all of us from that place and from the new places you will be as we continue further down the line here. So when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with our co-host, Mark LeJour.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
You've been listening to Mark LeJour's voice there as the announcer and as our guest today, which has been really exciting because he has shared with us a perspective that very few people can share or have reached. Now, certainly, there have been many people who have reached the heights that he has and dropped to some of the area, the levels that he has, and have learned. But a lot of people aren't coming out and talking about this because from who they were and the kind of friends that they had, they would be considered weird or like they've lost it or the sour grapes, whatever it is. And instead, we're getting someone that's speaking from the heart and who is going to be sharing this kind of message to the mass, to millions. And I know he's doing this not only through Life Changes, but he's writing a book and he's doing conferences. And so, Mark, in the few minutes we have remaining here, what other words of wisdom can you share with us?
Well, you brought up the book that I'm writing, so I might as well come talk from that perspective a little bit, because there's a body of material that one thing I did learn in all the work around the technology and the grid and the internet and computers and whatnot, of developed an analogy for me, and some of my awakening came by looking and drawing comparisons to the way computers work and how computers relate to each other, the internet, communications, connectivity, wireless, all of that, and their connection to mainframes or this big source of information, much like humans. In my mind's eye, I see humans like nodes, like individual computers. And that's not so special. There's a lot of people that talk about the human and their human brain as a computer these days, and our relationship. But I look at the human and its relationship to God, love, the intelligence of the universe, call it what you want, but that connection to that big mainframe in the sky, and intuition and telepathy and those coincidences, which happen so much, especially the more you're open to them, of thinking of someone and they call you, you're dialing out on a wireless frequency. Mm. And you know, Napoleon Hill was talking about this, and you know, near the turn of the century, this has been accepted, but yet we don't live it. But the essence to speak to your question is that we are our programming. And I think the biggest takeaway I would like to leave is that a subtle change of perspective can make all of the difference in the world. You think about this from birth. And of course, many believe before birth, but from birth on, every hug, every startle, every laugh, every chuckle, every hot stove, every stumble are lines of code. In essence, if you look at it, that are added to our programming. They're experiences that make up our belief system, which then we decide and define all of our decisions on. And if you look at it simply like that, everything is weird until we learn it, then suddenly it's normal and it becomes part of our belief system and common to us until we learn something different. Then all of a sudden, you know, I like Brussels sprouts. I didn't like Brussels sprouts when I was young. Now I love, you know, those types of things. You change and life changes as you grow up. But when you look at it that way, you realize that you can change your mind, or your mind changes moment by moment. Then it calls into question, why do we fight so hard for what we believe in when it's so easily and readily subject to change? You know, I call this our self-operating system, you know, the acronym SOS, our self-operating system. Our software is updatable and is updated on a real-time basis. And I do believe that that's part of what we do when we go to sleep, is sync up with our network, with our mainframe, download what we need to learn or the energy that we need to experience in our dreams, so that we wake up the next day ready for a whole new set of experiences. And once again, you look at what's going on in the world, and if everybody recognized that somebody in, you know, the center of the U.S. might have a different operating system than somebody in the Middle East, then how, because of where they grew up and the only things that they were exposed to and the only things that they were taught, then how can you judge or criticize them for what they learned, for the code that was input? And once you look at it from that perspective and draw it down into your relationships, and you start looking at the people that you work with or the people that you live with, etc., you can understand people differently, and you can relate to them differently, and you can help to evaluate negative beliefs, negative talk. When you listen to your thoughts and you recognize these, you look at them as bad lines of code, and you reprogram yourself to accept, tolerate, or just simply think on a more expansive worldview, or from a more expansive worldview perspective.
Wow. You know, I like it. And maybe, just maybe, then we can all just get along.
Can't we all just get along? I agree.
Well, about now is the time that we would normally say goodbye to our guest. And then, Mark, you would come on and we would do the producer segment. And then we talk about our guests. So let's talk about our guests. What did you think about our guest today?
I think this was one of the most fantastic guests we've had. But I'm a little biased.
Well, good for you. You know, actually, you should feel that. You should absolutely feel that. And I'm glad you said it. And it's a funny joke, but it's actually should be true. And more people should feel that way. So not from an ego perspective, but from a self-love perspective.
Well, yes, the humor is there. But, of course, as we've shared our ups and downs, you know that I'm certainly not immune to self-criticism or self-pressuring or self-evaluation. It's part of what we are when we look in the mirror and are willing to face our limitations in order to overcome them. I'm glad that I could say that with some comfort.
And some truth.
Mansinger.
Hey, life changes.
Life changes.
So that means that you're not going to listen to this interview and say, oh, I screwed that up. And
No,
it doesn't mean that.
No, it doesn't mean that.
Why? You know, it's so funny. Why do we do that? I would like to think that we do that because the next interview we do, we're going to do better.
You know why? It's our programming.
Oh.
It's that time when we sat up in class and spoke out and got criticized for it or chuckled at or remembered for it at another time. And that then becomes buried in our operating system as something to do or not to do or something to be critical of or not to be critical of going forward. Mm. And there are subconscious programs running within each of us that we are not even aware of because we can't call to mind all of the experiences that have made up our life up to this point. And so you respond at an intuitive level before your conscious mind even has an opportunity to understand why you're feeling the way you are or reacting to what you may be reacting to.
Mm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because maybe because I'm getting older, or maybe because I'm getting wiser or I'm learning and dealing with all of this stuff, but I'm laughing at myself a lot more. And I'm thinking how wonderful it would be if the children could get up and make a mistake and be okay with the mistake that they made and okay with the children laughing because it's funny at that moment and maybe even bringing it up afterwards and saying, yeah, I was funny when I made that mistake, wasn't I? And you were funny when you made that mistake, and they can all just enjoy that mistake.
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
But when you were building that program and writing those first lines of code, those mistakes didn't feel so good. And that is part of the beauty of being an experiential, you know, member of this thing we call the human race, because we get contrast. We get to feel what feels good and we get to feel what doesn't feel good. And those are all aspects of you know, of our makeup and therefore our programming. That you brought to mind obviously a very important thing is one thing I've learned. I have a beautiful boy, as you know, a three-year-old. And one of the gifts that he has given me is it's certainly been something that I've been criticized for and criticized myself for, is being too serious often. Not always, but often. And
like during this whole show?
Like during this whole show, probably. But that upsets for our next show.
Okay.
When you spend time with the child and you watch from a child's perspective, which doesn't have all the programming that you have now amassed, it certainly reflects the beauty of life and the wonder of just some of the most simple tasks and how fun everything can be. And boy, we can learn from kids.
Indeed. Well, I look forward to you sharing more of what you are learning from your incredible child, who hopefully is still retaining the information that he came with, and he's not buying too much into some of our teachings.
I agree. I'm just trying to stay out of his way. Learning from him.
Great parenting, actually. Maybe someday there'll be a book that comes out of that, too.
There you go.
So with that, actually, it's time to close. This has been fun.
Yeah, it has been fun.
I'm glad
we had this opportunity.
Yeah, me too. All righty. Well, I am Filippo Voltaggio, and I have been interviewing
Mark M. Leger.
And this has been a great pleasure. Along with Dorothy Donahue, our producer, and, of course, Mark, I thank you all for being part of the show and being part of the change, positive change, that we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Now's the time.